All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of This Week in College Football. I'm here with my host, Sonny Martinez. Sonny, thanks for joining us.
What's up, man? How we doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to get this episode on, and we got a lot to talk about. One thing that's been in the news lately, I'm sure you guys have seen, is there's some rule changes coming in college football. Maybe the addition of a 2-minute warning. How do you feel about that?
I kind of like that. I think it'll make things a little more interesting. Instead of just going right for it, team has a couple extra minutes there to prepare and see what they want to do and strategize and see where to go from there. I like the idea. I still wish that the clock stopped after first downs in college. I understand why they changed that to speed up the games. If you really want to speed up the games that much, I would suggest maybe not having 45 minutes worth of commercials. I think the NFL is
True.
absolutely terrible with that, but college is definitely better. But I think that the addition of a 2-minute warning would be really nice.
Yeah, so I so the 2-minute warning is one of the potential rule changes, as is the use of tablets and helmet communication. So unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of guys who hold up signs that are looking for new jobs, potentially.
I think we'll still see that in some form or fashion. I think we'll still see that.
I think so too, but I kind of like the I feel like it's just kind of silly. It's kind of like how we still track the ball with a chain if it's a first down or not. I feel like as the game evolves, it's just time that we start getting some progression.
Yeah, and how many cases have we seen a referee's put in the ball where it isn't even close, even after a review?
Yeah, that's how I feel the same way. I feel like that there's just we're just so far advanced. I feel like there should be enough to where we could track the ball exactly, kind of like how they can like baseball with the new balls.
Yeah, exactly. If baseball could have a strike zone where you could tell exactly where the ball is, even if they don't use it, I feel like there should definitely be something like that in football.
Yeah, I think the technology's there. I think it's just not adopted yet. I think they tried it in an NFL game, maybe. I could be wrong on that, but I thought they tried it once. So other news is this doesn't really make as much sense to me, but Arch Manning is opting out of the EA college football game because he wants to focus on football.
It kind of makes sense to me, and to be honest, I kind of like it. That's like an old school mentality, and that's kind of living up to his last name. He doesn't care about
Nuts.
being famous or playing as himself in a video game. He said he's not going to do it until he's starting at Texas, which I don't know if it's going to be this year with Ewers still there, but I think it's coming sometime in the near future, and he wants to focus on getting himself better rather than getting better at a video game. I don't have a problem with it. I actually respect it a lot.
I'd argue it creates more of a distraction. More people are going to ask you about it by opting out. If you'd have just been in the game, you'd be another one of the thousands of people in it. I feel like opting out makes that kind of a headline.
See, I feel like the people that are going to ask that question are the ones that are causing distractions rather than him. If he just shuts that down first thing and says, "Look, I'm only talking about this once and we're done," that should put this to bed.
Yeah, I just feel like it, I don't know. Am I wrong that I feel like it'd be less of a distraction to just go with the flow and be in the game?
All right, look at it this way, okay? And
Okay.
this is going to sound kind of harsh, but look at it this way. He's a backup quarterback, correct?
Yeah.
Would anybody care that he opted out if his last name wasn't Manning?
No.
Exactly. So why are we giving him special treatment, special privilege, whatever you want to call it? It's his prerogative to opt out, and it's just because of the last name that everybody's freaking out.
I mean, you're right about that. I just feel like, because I think he said that it was because there's no distractions. I feel like that just creates a little bit of one, but I see your point to this for sure.
Let's be honest here too. How old is he? Probably he's a sophomore, so 19. A 19-year-old dude is easily going to get distracted playing video games at some point or another.
That's true.
Right? We've all found ourselves at that age, especially the younger generation. We're like, all right, I know I have to get this done, but just one more game. And then that turns into 2 hours later, you're like, oh no, I just screwed up here. So again, that's another aspect of which I totally understand
I am still that guy, by the way. I was playing video games moments before we hopped on the podcast.
There's nothing wrong with that. What were you playing?
War Thunder. It's a tank game. I'm a big tank guy.
I've never even heard of that before.
it's a fun one. So another thing I wanted to bring up was, did you see that there's proposal for an automatic first round bye for Big Ten and SEC champions in the new playoff?
I think it's going to eventually turn into that anyways, but I think it'll be an unspoken thing. Like, you know, is there really a Big 12 team that's going to deserve a first round bye over an undefeated Georgia or whatever?
I just don't think that there should be a first round bye. I saw Sonny Dykes. He said that automatic first-round buys for the Big Ten and SEC is like the NFL saying the Cowboys get a first-round buy since they have more fans than the Bengals.
Well, Sonny Dykes just got scored on by Georgia again, so maybe he should focus more on that.
TCU fans are not going to like that.
I apologize. And the extra point is good.
You're just buried in their grave now. Yeah, so a lot of people, there was a big outcry about that first-round bye thing. People were not happy about that being a potential thing.
It's ridiculous. There's no reason for you to have a first-round bye just because of whatever conference is next to your name. I think eventually, like I said, it's going to become an unspoken thing where, yeah, because if Alabama goes undefeated in the SEC, Ohio State goes undefeated in the Big 12. You're going to tell me that a one-loss team from the Big 12 is going to deserve it, or even an undefeated ACC team? If we have another Florida State situation in that scenario, it's going to be the Big 10 and the SEC every year, anyways. But in the event that somebody else deserves it, then no, there should not be an automatic first-round bye just because of whatever conference you're in.
I wouldn't hate it if it was not tied to a conference. Like, say it was just tied, and this is going to sound silly because it's obviously mostly going to be the SEC and Big Ten, but if the number one and number two team, if you had to go with bias, just give it to the number one, number two team. So that way, like, it could be from any conference.
Exactly. That I like. Kind of like what they do in the NFL or what they did before they added the extra wildcard team.
Yeah, because then you earned it. It's not just whatever conference you're from.
Exactly. What happens one year if we have, well, I guess with divisions being eliminated, it kind of might not happen now. But say, for example, the Big Ten West, say Minnesota wins it by going 5-4 in the conference because there's just chaos and everybody beat each other. Minnesota goes on to upset Ohio State. You're going to tell me that now a 9-4 Minnesota team deserves a first round bye?
Yeah. No.
That's where I have a problem with it. But now I guess with divisions being eliminated, that's not as much of a concern. But still, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the Iowa, the Big Ten West, just I almost said a very bad word there. But the Big Ten West is a mess. And it really drags down the conference as a whole. I'm kind of glad they got rid of the divisions. It's going to make for better football.
Yeah, but then we run the risk of having an Ohio State-Michigan Big Ten championship game every year.
Not if the Nittany Lions have anything to say about it.
Or Oregon.
It's true. It's true, Oregon now. Another thing I wanted to bring up to you was, did you see that Nick Saban said the way Alabama players reacted after the Rose Bowl loss contributed to the decision to retire?
Yeah, I would love to know what exactly he meant by that. Like, what do you mean how they reacted? Were they upset? Were they angry? Were they threatening to quit the team? Alabama's been winning so long that those players don't know how to lose.
So he did elaborate a little bit. He basically was saying that, like, a lot of players were more interested in how much am I going to get paid to be here next year instead of, like, how are we going to be better next year. That was kind of what he was getting at.
All right, so that's a scenario that I totally agree, especially for a guy like Saban who came up in college football in 70s, 80s. You played back then for the love of the game and because you love the school you go to, not because of how much money you're going to make or will I start or will I sit. If you lose and your very first thought is how much money am I going to make, then you're definitely not a team player.
Yeah, and I think he was – I saw somewhere that maybe he was talking about their center, the one that had all the snapping problems.
After the game against Michigan, he's worried about how much money he's going to make when he couldn't even snap the ball right in overtime?
Yeah, that guy.
Priorities, man. That should have been the last thing on his mind at that moment. And I totally understand why Saban would be pissed if he heard that.
Yeah, I'd be pissed here. I think Saban, I feel like this wasn't the year he wanted to go out on. I feel like he wanted to go out on top, but just the whole NLI and the landscape changing kind of forced them out.
Yeah, no doubt. He wanted to go out a winner, which this year he didn't, and it was a very painful way to lose. You know, a guy like Saban doesn't want to go out on a loss, period, but especially what happened there.
Yeah, I kind of wish he did go out on top. There's just too many guys who stick around for too long. I mean, obviously he wasn't one. You still could be at the top of the game right now if he wanted to be. But, like, a guy like Bill Belichick might have stuck around too long.
He didn't need Brady to win.
Yeah, I know he wanted to, but he didn't really do the best job at proving that.
And here's the thing. If you really want a scapegoat on why Saban left, Tommy Rees. I said straight from the get-go, that is an absolutely terrible hire. And all the Notre Dame fans jumped on me because he's an offensive genius. No, he's not. He's not a good offensive coordinator. He wasn't a good quarterback. He's not a good offensive coordinator. He single-handedly he cost him the game against Texas with just horrendous play calling all game long. The game against USF was an absolute disgrace. I don't care if Alabama won that or not. If you watch that game, that was probably the worst Alabama football game that I've watched since, what, the ULM game in 2007?
Yeah, they did not play well in that game.
The final play call in overtime against Texas. You got a shot to win, and that is your play call? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, they had no USF had no business being in that game either. That was a very disappointing showing by Alabama.
Yeah, that was it. It was more than disappointing. The players looked like they had no interest in being there.
I feel like that's a bigger problem, though. We throw the word genius around way too much in football, college football coaching. People call Ryan Day a genius. I don't think Ryan Day is a genius.
No, yeah, you're right. That's one of those things that it's like a crush word almost. When you can't think of anything else to say, you call him a genius.
Yeah, and it's not. You want to talk about a genius? Nick Saban, genius. Kirby Smart. Probably a football genius.
And you know what? It's not even guys that are at that level of success. You don't have to have a national championship to be considered that. Look at a guy like Mike Leach.
Yeah.
How much he changed the game of football, which, by the way, happy heavenly birthday, Coach Leach. We miss you. But look at a guy like that, changing the game. Literally changed the way the game was played. A guy like that is where you serve that word, not to somebody like Tommy Rees.
Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly revolutionized it. He went to the NFL, and then the sport passed him by.
But I would say he's a genius of, like, the spread West Coast offense. I would still give him that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I think there were teams – nobody could figure out how to stop him for how many years.
Yeah, I'd say this year, I think – as much as it's going to pain me, I think Ohio State is going to have an incredible year because Chip Kelly is going to be running the offense and just the offense. I saw the other day he said he's so happy to be an offensive coordinator. He's just coaching football 8 hours a day. He's not dealing with NLI. He's not recruiting much because he stinks as a recruiter. He just doesn't like to do it. But he said he just likes to be doing football things instead of all the bureaucracy and coaching.
Yep, he could focus on one thing, which is his specialty, which we know he's very good at. But now he has to also prove that he can catch back up. Because like I said, college football passed him by in the time he left. He was unstoppable for a long time, then he left. Coaches not only figured out how to do what he was doing, but they figured out how to do it better. That's something that Chip Kelly has to figure out. All right, how do I gain that step ahead again?
Well, I think one thing that's going to help him, because I don't really necessarily agree with the game has passed him by. I think really? That just the athletes he was using at UCLA weren't athleting enough. That I feel like when he gets to Ohio State and he has all these 5-star guys that are going to be NFL stars, I can't see a scenario where Chip Kelly can't get yards with these guys.
Yeah, but when Chip Kelly started at Oregon, he wasn't getting all the 5-star guys. He was just knowing how to develop the 2- and 3-stars. And then once he started to find success, that's when the 5-star guys came.
No, you're definitely right there. But I just think that the defenses have gotten better, so it's harder to run that kind of offense without, because, you know, linebackers have gotten faster. They've gotten, you know, more the build of a linebacker has changed since 2011, 2012. Now there's guys that could probably be playing safety playing linebacker. And you're going to need athletes to beat them. And I feel like Ohio State, they have probably, what, the top 1% of football athletes?
Yeah, that's very true.
All right, Tony, so you got a trivia question for me. I have one for you, but you can go first.
Correct. So I did some searching on College Football Reference, which for you guys who have not ever used that site, is one of the absolute best college football websites out there. Pretty much any little bit of information you want to know, essentially from the start of college football till today. Great website. Mm-hmm. But in the process of doing so, I thought, which team has been ranked in the AP poll the longest? And by that, I mean a team that has been ranked at least 1 week in every single season for the longest duration of time. The answer is 1968, but I would like to know from you, which team is that?
Is it Notre Dame?
It is not Notre Dame.
I don't think it's Penn State. They were bad during the sanction years. Alabama was bad in the 90s, I think. Texas, I don't feel it. Oh, man.
Texas is definitely a contender.
I feel like they weren't ranked during the – did they fall out of it during the Charlie Strong years?
I don't know. Is that your guess?
Yeah, Texas is my guess.
That is not the answer.
Oh, all right. So then I pivot. All right, I'm going to audible here, and I'm going to go with the Oklahoma Sooners.
It is not Oklahoma either.
All right, you've stumped me.
Think a conference that we've already talked about today.
So the Big Ten.
And I'll give you a hint. It's not some random team that always hangs out at like the 21-25 spot.
It's the Ohio State Buckeyes.
It is indeed Ohio State. Ohio State's been ranked at least 1 week every single year dating back to 1968. That's pretty impressive.
That is impressive.
And that's a trend that I don't think is going to end anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either. So I've got one.
There were two other teams on there that have long standings on there. Georgia's one of them, and I think the other one, surprisingly, was Wisconsin. I think they both went back to like 1987. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Ohio State. What do you got for me?
Okay, so there are only five schools in all of FBS that don't have university in their school name. What are they?
Oh, man. All right, this is going to be an interesting one here.
I will give you a hint because this is really hard. Three of them end in academy.
Three of them end in academy.
Yes.
Hmm.
That should help if you could piece the three together.
Air Force.
Yep.
Navy.
Yes.
Army.
Yeah, okay, well, that helped a lot more than I thought it would.
Oh,
so there's only two more.
That end in academy. Okay, so it's definitely those three. And then from there.
Yeah, if those three, you're right. I will tell you one is in the it's the ACC.
I feel like I should know this.
Actually, they're both in the ACC. Now that I think about it, they're both in the ACC.
It's not Florida State. Not Virginia Tech.
So Virginia Tech is a maybe. People say that it ends in Virginia Tech State University, but
Virginia Technical Institute is the real name, though.
Yeah, okay, so people are arguing about if that's an answer or not. So that could be six then. But there's two more in this conference. That's not an official answer, according to
the... Oh, Boston College.
Okay, Boston College is an answer. It's not Boston College University.
That should have been the first one that entered my head.
There's one more. You were close with the Virginia Tech. There's...
University of Virginia. I don't know. I'm stumped on this one here.
that doesn't end in university or have university in it. Georgia yep. Tech? It would be it along the same Tech. Lines of Virginia Tech.
It is Georgia Tech. You got okay. them.
Okay, see, you got me there because once you said Virginia Tech wasn't one, okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, you got it. That's awesome.
Okay.
So yeah, you Boston were a College
should
guy.
Have been the first one that came in my head.
Yeah, that was a good one. So I know you had a tweet that was a little bit of a banger this week. You're asking people for their hottest college football takes. So do you want to read off a few and I'll read off a few?
Yeah, we got some great responses to this. So credit to you guys out there for your thoughts on this. I really appreciate all the responses. And like I said, we had some really good ones. And one of the ones that caught my eye almost immediately was Hank McCoy says the NIL has ruined college sports as a whole. Now, this goes way beyond football, obviously. So what are your thoughts on that?
I'm just tired of the whole NIL conversation. It sucks, but it's where we're at. I mean, it's not going to – we tough times don't last. Tough people do. And someone who has to watch Big Ten football is a tough person. So I consider myself – I'll get through this.
See, I disagreed with that. And the reason is look at some of the non – how do I put this? Non-money-making sports, like the ones that don't get the respect they deserve. Look at like a softball where you have some of those players who are getting NIL deals that would not have been able to have this. You know what I mean? Like football, you're always going to have the eyes. Basketball, you're always going to. College baseball, I guess to some degree you will also. But a sport like softball where now somebody can you know, go for a company or whatever. Somebody like Livy Dunn in gymnastics, just all sorts of doors that are open for the lesser sports, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like me, the sport that I'm into, that's not really the most popular, is college wrestling.
Yeah, and there's some good ones out there too.
Yeah, and they're definitely not getting paid, but they should.
Another one that I saw that I really would like your opinion on is that Tennessee is a college football blue blood.
I saw your response to this. I would agree. They're very borderline. I wouldn't even say a step below. I see the argument for both sides. I think they're more of a blue ball than not. To be honest.
I do too, but I there's just something missing there.
It's just like the recency bias. They've been proud of down a little recently. I feel like if they get back, the thing is they need a playoff berth. Once they get a playoff berth, then they'll kind of be back.
See, and I don't even think it's recency bias at all. I just think it's that there's just something that's not there for some reason. They're right on the doorstep. They're right
close,
there.
They're close. That's what I said. It's borderline.
So who do you consider college football blue bloods in?
Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, Notre Dame, of course. Notre Dame's blue blood.
Okay, so you didn't fall into the trap that I was hoping you would. Because if we're going to go recency bias, I was hoping you were going to say USC.
No.
I think they are.
Okay, I can see the argument for, but okay, they might be a blue blood.
I think they are, and I think Nebraska is also.
Okay, and I would also say Nebraska is.
Especially a team like Nebraska, what have they done lately?
Yeah, but okay, so I feel like if you have a very strong history, like I feel like then you could enter the blue blood conversation. It's hard to lose blue blood status.
If you have a very strong history, then doesn't that also include a program like Minnesota?
Rutgers.
Well, just because you started it doesn't mean you're the best at it.
National championship, first year. Strong history.
Yeah, that
you walked into that one.
I know, and I'm trying to figure out how to dig my way out of it.
No.
Okay, so if Tennessee is not, and a team like Nebraska is, what about Penn State? I think they're right there with Tennessee. I think they're in the same group.
See, I would actually say that I think. This is a biased answer. I can't really say it. I would say yes because they're just consistently a top program.
I wouldn't say they're consistently a top program. I'd say they're consistently a quality program.
Yeah, but they had some peaks, though. So I feel like you could make the argument for them. And, like, they are really – they've been pretty solid under James Franklin, too. They're building, like, a good resume for just like Tennessee. They're a quality program, like you said.
So what about Miami, then? Another team that's had a lot of ups and downs and dominated the sport for a little bit.
I'll say this. I think Miami is the first school to lose blue blood status.
To lose blue blood status.
I feel like they were in the 2000s. Feel like they've lost it. They haven't been relevant in a very long time.
No, they haven't at all, but neither is Nebraska. So what makes Nebraska keep it, but Miami loses it?
I would say just how much... you've walked me into one here, too. How am I going to bullshit out of this? I would say that my disdain for the University of Miami is what makes them lose blue blood status. And my Big Ten homerism allows Nebraska to hold on for a few more years.
You know what? I respect the honesty on that answer, and I'll give you a pass from that.
Yeah, honesty was the only way out of that one.
So then who's the next team to earn it?
I'll tell you what, Oregon wins a national championship or two, they might be up there.
No.
Yes.
No, I think the correct answer here is Clemson.
I feel like they're doing too much of a downward trajectory right now. One I would say that maybe is there, LSU.
Yeah, LSU is definitely in consideration, but I think they're also another team that's right there with Tennessee and Penn State.
Yeah, but Florida, you can put Florida up there for that too. The Gators.
Yeah, Florida's a possibility.
Yep. Oh, Texas is definitely a blue blood. I don't know if we said Texas, but Texas and Oklahoma are definitely blue bloods.
Yeah, Texas is, and nobody thinks they are more than them. So.
Yeah. Texas will tell the world they're blue bloods. I think the next team to be a blue blood could be Mizzou.
They got a lot of work to do.
I'm kidding.
A lot of work to do.
So just one I wanted to talk about quick was where was it? Someone said that Oregon is up there at Notre Dame is the annually overrated program. I don't like that. I disagree.
I would say recently, yes. But if you look at Notre Dame, how could they be overrated based off their rankings as of late? Give me your opinion while I pull something up real quick.
Well, I just think Notre Dame constantly thinks they're there, but they don't. The thing is, they don't. Notre Dame fans don't evaluate themselves fairly.
That is very true.
They don't understand. Like, okay, Notre Dame is not there yet. Like, even right now, they're not there.
Okay, so let's look at this then.
Okay,
you're saying that they're constantly overvalued. Let's look at the last. We'll go since 2015, okay?
Okay.
Preseason, Notre Dame was ranked number 11. They finished the year number 11. 2016 was an absolute disaster. They start 10, they're unranked. 17, unranked, finish 11. 2018, start 12, finish 5. 19, start 9, finish 12, down.
Okay.
2020, COVID year, hard to consider that for anybody, but still they started number 10, they finished number 5. 2021, start at 9, finish 8. 22, they start at 5, end at 18. 23, they start at 13, end at 14. I think, if anything, they're being valued just right now.
Okay. I would just say that they're overrated by the media. How about that?
And as much as I hate to say it, too, I think they're overrated by the fans just as much, too. And you know I love Notre Dame, and the fan base is great, but sometimes, like, they're just not... I don't want to say not in touch with reality, but let's call it what it is, you know? It goes, again, not to harp on Tommy Reese, but how many fans, as soon as you're a Notre Dame guy, like, that's it. You can do no wrong. Everybody loved Brian Kelly until he left.
Yeah. I don't get me started on Brian Kelly. Don't get me started. All right, so I think we're going to have a guest on for this episode. We're not sure yet, but so... if you hear this, that means there was a guest after this. If not, then I'll wrap it up. All right, so thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of This Week in College Football. Follow me on Twitter at CFB Talk Daily and Sonny at Sonny Martinez FS. And thank you guys for listening.
Thank you guys.
Hey guys, John post editing here. We had an interview with Sonny Martinez and John McAdam from Stick to Wrestling podcast. He's a big Tennessee Volunteer fan, so here's the interview.
All right, everybody. I am super excited about today's guest. He is one of the absolute smartest college football people I know. Passionate fan, loves the game. He's someone I've spent many Saturdays talking ball with. He's also no stranger to podcasts, as he hosts the Stick to Wrestling podcast on the Acadian Vanguard Podcast Networks. I would call him the great, but I don't really want Brian Last and Stephen P. New knocking at my front door, so I'll just call him John McAdam. John, what's up, man? How we doing?
Sonny, thank you for having me on. It's a real pleasure. It's funny that I've known you for a long time through pro wrestling, and here we are doing a college football podcast.
Absolutely, and I've been on your show before, and I'm happy to return the favor, and it's something we've been talking about doing for quite a while, and I'm glad we can finally make it work.
And I'm glad you finally, you know, a few years back, you were like, I think it was a few years, you were like, yeah, I'm thinking about doing a college football podcast. Do you have any you know, insights or tips? And I'm like, well, it's work, you know, and sometimes you got to do it, even though it's not the first thing you want to do. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one day I was doing Stick to Wrestling and I was dead tired. I'm fine if I don't get a lot of sleep one night, but like two nights in a row, like I get creamed. And, you know, I turn 60 next year and you know how it is. And I started recording Stick to Wrestling, and 10 minutes into it, it was like I felt fine. It like shook me out of it.
Absolutely. It definitely has a way of making things right when everything seems wrong around you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just have a good conversation with a good friend. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you're not feeling well, don't jump into bed. Like, get on your bike, shoot a few hoops, whatever. Go for a run. Don't just stay in bed. You can shake it if, you know, if it's not that serious.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. So, John, give our listeners a little background on yourself. How'd you become a college football fan? Who's your team? Tell us a little bit about yourself here.
All right. I got into college football. It was funny. I mean, it started as, you know, me not being a big fan. Then in high school, I had friends who were college football fans. But we're going back to the early 80s, and college football, first of all, it really wasn't that big up here. I live in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is like a half an hour outside of Boston, and it's not big up here. And in the 80s, college football, you know, you got a 12 o'clock game on like a UHF station, and then you had the big game at 3:30 on ABC, which was usually, for up here at least, a Big Ten game. And then that was it. And you know, literally, if there were night games, and there always were, you know, West Coast, we had to wait until Monday morning when the scores were printed in either USA Today or the Boston Globe. So it's hard to maintain a high level of fandom when, you know, you're given so little. And then as time went on, there was more and more college football available. So that feeds into kind of the fanatic of it. And, you know, I mean, here I am sometimes. It's the 80s. I am in my 20s. And I'm like, you know, okay, I'm supposed to be going out having a really good time. But dang, Miami and LSU is on tonight. I'm not going anywhere. So as the TV coverage increased, the fandom increased, and now here we are, you know, last year, 2023, I could watch more than pretty much. I think I could watch literally any game I wanted that was televised. That, you know, that we've really come a long way.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine having to wait multiple days for games. I grew up in the generation with the phones and the internet where if you want to know something, you just click on, you go. We don't have to wait for newspapers or anything. And like you said, pretty much any game you want to watch is on right now.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get more into this later, but I mean, I'm a big Tennessee Volunteers fan, and, you know, I haven't missed a game in, I want to say, 5 or 6 years, and we're talking, you know, against Ball State and UConn and, you know, some games that you couldn't imagine being televised even just 20 years ago, and now it's all out there for us.
Yeah, and, you know, that's part of the magic of college football. When the season first starts, or when you're getting back into it like that, you look at the guide and you're like, oh my God, New Mexico State and Jacksonville State, I can't wait for that game. By the time you get to mid-November, you're like, Minnesota, Iowa, who the hell's going to watch this?
It is 100% true. A couple of years ago, I wanted to watch – it was Colorado State and Oregon State during week zero, that week at the very beginning of the season where there's like six games, you know, week zero. And you had to have the Pac-12 network in order to see this game, and we didn't have Pac-12 network available to us. So I'm like going through every, how else can I put it, illegal stream I can try to find for this stupid, you know, nothing game between these two teams. And then I think it was that same day I wound up paying $5.99 for some UMass game against, you know, some unknown opponent, because I was that starved for college football by the end of August.
That's fantastic. And that's the beauty of college football. There's not really many other sports that we're going to do that with. Like even in the NFL, we're not going to do that for a preseason game or for an opening weekend game, but with college football, anything that's on, like, man, that's good enough.
You know, I remember back in, I want to say 1992, okay, I still think this is funny. I got up, did what I needed to do, started watching the pregame at either 10 or 10:30, did nothing but watch college football all day long. Then at midnight, they had a midnight Eastern time kickoff, BYU at Hawaii. And now, so my college football games day started at either 10 or 10:30. And back then, both BYU and Hawaii did nothing but throw the ball. So that game didn't get over until like 4, 4:30 in the morning. And so that's how big and crazy I was into it back in the day. And then it's 4:30. I'm going to bed. I'm like, oh, man, I got to get up at 10 o'clock for the NFL previews. That's the moment I'm like, I think you have a problem, sir.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, there's nothing better than a midnight Hawaii kickoff. I get way more excited over that than I should.
Yeah. I mean, I remember one year they had, this was maybe 30 years ago, Boston College at Hawaii at midnight, and it wasn't shown locally, and it made me crazy. I'm like, Boston College is supposed to be the local team, and we didn't even have local coverage of it, so I went to bed sad.
August 31st, 1996 is what I'm seeing here.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, that's going back a little bit, but you mentioned that you're from the Northeast and you're a Tennessee fan. How did that come about?
All right, I know that does not compute for a lot of people because, you know, Boston and Knoxville are not exactly similar in very many ways, but when I first started watching, okay, and we're going back to the 1980s, and I hope no one listening takes umbrage to anything I'm about to say, but, you know, you would watch an Alabama game, and Bear Bryant, I'm sorry, that guy was despicable. And then you watch a Georgia game, and Vince Dooley is behind the bench, and, like, who would ever want to play for that guy? And then Florida wasn't as bad, but Florida was known as a big-time cheating school. So I found myself always rooting against those three teams. Well, those three teams are Tennessee's main rivals. So I find myself, you know, if Tennessee and Florida or Tennessee and Georgia were on, Tennessee-Bama was on pretty much every year, I'd be cheering like crazy for Tennessee because I wanted to see Bama lose. I wanted to see Georgia lose. And finally, I just embraced the orange and white.
All right, so you brought up Vince Dooley from Georgia, which means I have to ask you this question because I don't think I had met you at this point. Where do you rank Derek Dooley on your list of least favorite Tennessee head coaches?
Well, let's put it this way. I am not only a Tennessee Volunteers fan, I am a lifelong New England Patriots fan. I am a lifelong Boston Red Sox fan, lifetime Boston Celtics fan. Derek Dooley ranks last in coaches of all of those coaches slash managers and of all of those teams. Derek Dooley, when he was hired, it was a very dark day for me because, you know, we're going back. Where are we going back? Like 12 years now?
Maybe yeah, it might be even longer than that. It might be closer to 15.
Yeah. And here's a guy who didn't win at Louisiana Tech. No, and oh, and he's Vince Dooley's kid. Never mind. You know, let's throw that one in. But he, you know, he didn't win big at Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech to Tennessee is a giant leap. Okay, you go from Louisiana Tech to I don't know, Colorado State, or, you know, the University of Houston or something like that. You don't make that jump to Tennessee. And on top of it all, Kevin Sumlin, who I liked at the University of Houston, wanted the Tennessee job. And it just drove me nuts that Dooley got it because he interviewed so well. But my take on it was, okay, he's here. Let's see how it goes. And it was just one embarrassment after another with that guy. And, you know, I mean, I've heard a couple of different things about Derek Dooley. That, A, he really is a very, very smart guy. Maybe just, the jump from Louisiana Tech to Tennessee was too much to ask from anyone. But secondly, I've also heard that he is an incredibly arrogant person, and he turned a lot of people off during his 3 years at Tennessee. And I was very relieved to see him go.
Yeah, I had heard the same thing about Dooley, that he just had a tendency of rubbing people the wrong way. And maybe it wasn't so much the arrogance. Maybe it's just who he was. I mean, I'm sure you know people like that in the world that mm-hmm. have that vibe off of them, even though that's really not it. You know what I mean?
He was smart enough to pass the bar. He, you know, he could have been a lawyer. He passed the bar, and he decided, no, I'm going to be a football coach instead. And, you know, smart enough to pass the bar is obviously not a very stupid person. But, you know, you're right. That arrogance within him just came out. And, yeah, I was very turned off by the guy. He had some kind of a knee problem, and he's sitting there on this ridiculous bar stool on the sideline in the middle of a game with those silly orange Tennessee pants he had. I'm like, what are we even doing here?
He looked like 1999 Godfather.
Well, in some ways, yes.
So now that we're over the Derek Dooley era, what do you think about the state of Tennessee now and where the team is heading?
I mean, I'm very excited. You know, going back, I was very spoiled in the 90s under Phil Fulmer. I mean, you know, they would go like 11-2 or 10-3, and I'd be like, oh, this is horrible. We didn't beat Florida. We didn't win the SEC. And, you know, now I would kill for a 10-3 season, or God forbid an 11-2 season, and, you know, beating Florida. But when they hired Josh Heupel, I was really like, okay, he's not my first choice, but I'm willing to give this a chance, you know, especially after everything Tennessee had been through, you know, with Pruitt and what's his name from Cincinnati, Butch Jones before him. And he's done a remarkable job. I love the guy. He can recruit. He can coach. You know, and the team seems to be off its rear end, more than just off its rear end. I mean, if Tennessee, I mean, right now they're probably the second best team in the SEC, but they're a sizable step behind Georgia. Everyone's a step behind Georgia right now. I mean, you know, nationally, Georgia's phenomenal. But if they could just take that next step, I mean, you know, I'm pretty hopeful. Their quarterback, Nico, is fantastic. He looks like he's going to be something else. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I mean, coming into 2024, they need a lot of help in the secondary, but it all looks pretty promising.
You know, that's the thing about the glory days. Unless you have a coach like Nick Saban, you don't realize you're in them until they're gone. Tennessee fans, unfortunately, didn't realize how good they had it at that point. And how could you? Because, you know, when you're in the middle of something like that, you think it's something that's going to last forever. But, you know, you make one wrong coaching hire and things just go south from there.
I mean, and the worst part was that I had seen it with so many other teams. Like, okay, you know, you're Baylor and you're not happy with your coach and you bring in another guy and that guy shows you how much worse things can be. And, yep. You know, it happened to Texas Tech not too long ago. And you're right. You know, it felt like in the 90s that, you know, big seasons were Tennessee's birthright. And, you know, the last 15 or so have shown us that they're not. And you have to appreciate the good times when you get them, even if it's a 1 o'clock in the afternoon New Year's Day game against Iowa. You're like, wow, we made it to this.
Yeah, that's still better than some of the past seasons they've had, because Tennessee's gone through some dark times over the last few years.
They have. I mean, Butch Jones last season. Oh, no. Butch Jones last season was their worst ever until Jeremy Pruitt showed us the way, showed us a new depth of hell. And, you know, for Heupel to get the thing turned around as quickly as he did, I mean, you know, you couldn't ask for more.
You know, as good of a coach as Phil Fulmer was and Josh Heupel is right now, neither one of them can claim the championship of life. Butch Jones can.
Oh! If anyone listening wants to, there is a phenomenal meme out there where Tennessee is celebrating in the middle of on the field, and one of the guys has a life board game that he's holding up over his head. You know, honestly, not just Butch Jones saying that. They had a disappointing season in 2016. And there, you know, someone asked him, well, how do you feel about, you know, not winning the championship, you know, the SEC championship? And he's like, oh, well, they're champions. They're champions of life. And I'm like, the average 19, 20, 21-year-old is going to look at this and they're going to be like, why am I here? Or if you're 17, 18, you're going to be like, why do I want to come here? And that really did, I think, mark the point where, like, that was the end for Butch Jones.
Yeah, that just reeked of like, all right, I'm grasping for anything here.
Yeah, and everything fell apart so quickly in 2017. And it felt like, you know, you're walking on thin ice and you're hearing the cracks. And yeah, it all happened.
Yeah, and then the sanctions came and it just, it could have gotten a lot worse than it actually did.
It really could have. I mean, the stuff that was going on with Jeremy Pruitt, with, you know, thousands of dollars in McDonald's bags. I mean, if you're going to cheat, learn how to do it, man.
Yeah, he was certainly not smooth about it at all. He was not running an SMU-level campaign there.
No, he wasn't. And, you know, as a matter of fact, and I felt the same. When Tennessee hired Dooley, I was like, oh, God, no. When they hired Butch Jones, I was very happy. No, he wasn't my first guy, but he did really well at Cincinnati. And unfortunately, Butch just, you know, the team started to take on his personality. And frankly, you know, they lost a lot of games that they should have won. But I don't like to use the word choked in sports. I think it gets overused, but Butch got really tense at the end of the game and the team, you know, just kind of choked it away. And that happened too often. When they hired Jeremy Pruitt, I was like, okay, I'm willing to see how this works. He's the DC at Alabama. He knows what a championship program looks like from the inside. And almost from, you know, the first year, I'm like, okay, it's his first year. Let's see what happens. And then it really fell apart the second year. And then the scandals happened and he had to go. And frankly, I think one of the best things that happened to Tennessee football was when Phil Fulmer was relieved of his duties as AD because he did not know what he was doing. As much as I love Phil, I don't know what qualified him to be an athletic director.
I agree with that. It was kind of a weird hire to begin with, and it seemed like more of a thank you to him. Like maybe a deputy AD role would have been better for him. That way he's still consulting. He's still with the university, but you're right. The athletic director position just didn't really fit him at all.
I forget the guy's name, but I believe he's now the AD at Kansas State. Phil Fulmer supposedly really did a number on this guy, like pulling the rug out from him. And he was on a plane trying to get Mike Leach to jump from Washington State to Tennessee. And I guess the Wi-Fi was out on the plane, or at least that's what this guy was saying. And Fulmer's like, no, this guy just, you know, went AWOL on us. And he wound up getting fired over that and a couple of other things that it's been alleged that, you know, Phil Fulmer kind of set this guy up to fail or made it look like he failed so that Phil could take that job. Again, allegations that it was a coup.
I'd never thought of it that way before, but that's actually very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Fulmer wanted that job, and, you know, like I said, he was a great football coach, and I'm sorry his career as a football coach ended the way it did. I'm very surprised another program didn't come after him after, you know, he was fired by Tennessee, but, you know, they didn't.
Yeah, and it leads me to believe that there was some sort of reason. Like, Fulmer's a coaching legend. You would think at least somebody would reach out to him in some capacity.
Yeah, I remember when Indiana opened up a couple, 2 or 3 years after Fulmer was fired. I'm like, this is the perfect opportunity. You know, I don't think Indiana's going to win a national championship with Fulmer or anywhere else, but he'll get the best out of that program. And to my knowledge, there was no interest. I know East Tennessee was interested in Fulmer once, and I can't blame him for saying, no, that job's beneath me.
No, at that point, he probably made the right move just to stick with the legacy he's got and continue with whatever he was doing.
Yeah, nothing but love for Fulmer overall. I mean, one of the great things about having Phil Fulmer as your coach in the 90s is, you know, he's not going anywhere. You know, the Cleveland Browns kind of sniffed around him at one point, but you know he wasn't leaving for, let's say, USC the way Lane Kiffin was. He wasn't leaving for any other college job because, you know, he was Tennessee. You know, he played for the team and he had a lot of loyalty.
Yeah, and loyalty is key in college football, especially at the coaching level. If you can go to recruits and confidently say, this is our guy, he's not going anywhere, that's huge.
It really is. It's, well, back in the day it was. You definitely want to have continuity within the program, you know, and I mean, before Heupel, you know, Tennessee had anything but continuity. And it was weird, you know, having Fulmer as your coach for so long, and you never find yourself wondering, you know, okay, who's going to be the coach next year? And Tennessee went through about, you know, after Fulmer, about 15 years of, you know, oh, man, we've got a revolving door here. I now know what it's like to be like an Arkansas fan or something like that.
Yeah, that's very true. You mentioned that you think Tennessee is the second best team in the SEC, which is interesting. I don't disagree with that, but I'm not totally sure on that yet. But second best in the SEC should be enough to make this year's college football playoff, which is expanding to 12 teams. Do you think that's a good range of teams? Do you think it should be more, should be less? Where do you stand on this?
Well, Sonny, a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I think, you asked me in prep for the show, you said, you know, what number do you think is the right number? 4 was the perfect number because every team that needed to be in the whole time they had 4 teams got in. And then there was a couple of teams, more than a couple of teams, a few teams that didn't need to be in. But, you know, if you're 12-1 and you get left out, you can't point and say, okay, we didn't do anything wrong. Yes, you did. You lost the game. And I am very afraid that as time goes on, you know, I love NCAA basketball, but it can be hard to watch because you know deep down that this game really, you know, any regular season game, it's kind of not going to matter in the big picture. It's not going to matter as far as determining a champion goes. You know, if you watch, you know, Michigan, Ohio State were both undefeated almost 20 years ago, and you knew, you know, they were both 11-0, and you're like, this is an elimination game. I cannot miss this game. If that scenario were to repeat itself in 2024, okay, well, whoever wins will probably have a higher seed. Like, that sucks.
You're not wrong, but you said something there that I kind of want to zone in on a little bit. You said that in the entirety of the 4-team playoff, all the teams that have needed and deserved to be in have been in.
So I know it's coming.
The Florida State debate from this year, because that's going to be the thing that people are going to ask you off of this. Where do you stand on Florida State? They did nothing wrong. They truly did nothing wrong, undefeated, yet they still didn't get in. Where do you stand on that?
Sonny, I stand corrected. I stand corrected that Florida State needed to be in, and they did not get in, and that was an absolutely glaring, I don't even know what to call it, but let's use the word mistake by the selection committee. But that wasn't the problem. There wasn't the 4-team playoff. The problem there was the selection committee. And, you know, Florida State absolutely needed to get in, and they didn't get in. And I think, you know, them saying, well, Jordan Travis got hurt, so let's leave them out, it was beyond preposterous.
Yeah, you can't punish a team based off injuries after they did literally everything they asked. Was their schedule the toughest in the country? No, it wasn't. But they did everything that was asked of them. So then if you're going to put Florida State in, who would you have taken out? The SEC champion Alabama or a Texas team that beat Alabama?
I would have taken Alabama out. And again, for the reason that you stated, that how do you leave Texas out when head-to-head Alabama beat Texas? Texas beat Alabama, excuse me. You can't do it.
And not only did Texas beat Alabama, they beat Alabama on the road by 10. That's something that just doesn't happen.
It doesn't, and you can't look at your fan base, your college football fan base, and say, hey, that game doesn't count. So, you know, you have to look at it. Their records were identical, and head-to-head Alabama lost. And you know, I'm saying this, obviously, as a Tennessee fan, I do not like Alabama. I don't like Texas either. So, but, you know, even no matter who it was, I mean, look, I don't like Alabama, but I think I can look at the situation objectively and say, hey, you know, Texas won. They deserve to be in, and they're the Big 12 champions.
So you think 4 teams is the best, but we're going to move to 12 this year, and then it's going to expand again to 14. I feel like I already know your answer on this based off what you've previously said. Do you think the group of 5 should get an automatic qualifier?
Categorically, no, especially being as, you know, the group of 5, well, that's part one of those is the Pac-12, right? We can't just have the Oregon State, Washington State team get in. But, I mean, I think that the SEC and the Big Ten clearly are the two best conferences in the country. You know, if you go 10-2, or let's say 11-1, if you go 11-1 in the SEC or the Big Ten, that is way better than going 11-1 in the ACC or the Big 12. As a matter, I'll go a step further. Going 10-2 in the SEC is better than going 11-1 in the ACC.
See, I disagree with that, and I think it's all on context. I think it depends on what team is it, because if you're talking about Clemson, then yeah, you're probably right. But if you're talking about a team like Boston College or a team like North Carolina State, and two, what does the non-conference schedule look like?
That's a big one.
So I think there's a lot more that goes into it than that.
Oh, I agree with you, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm saying that generally, that, you know, generally, yep, a 10-2 SEC team is going to be better than a 11-1 Big 12 team. But I mean, if the Big 12 team, you know, did go out and beat a big SEC team and then, you know, had a tough in-conference schedule, you know, that, of course, that should be taken into account.
So are you closing the door on a group of 5 team ever winning the playoff?
Closing the door is not quite closing the door, but I can't imagine it ever happening, especially, you know, you can't, like, there have been teams, the all-time great Boise State-Oklahoma game. Wow, that was, you know, one of the greatest games ever played.
Absolutely.
Boise State, in that case, Boise State is going to need to do more than just get one in on Oklahoma. Okay, well, we played our best game and we beat Oklahoma, and now it's next week and we got to do it again against someone else. And then the next week or whatever it is, they have to do it a third time. I'm not saying it cannot happen, but I think if it happened once in a – I don't think it'll even happen once in a generation.
What do you think the group of 5 ceiling is within that then? Championship game or semifinals, or where do they go?
I think the puncher's chance against a major school, where, you know, they get that one big upset. I'm not going to say that's the ceiling, but I think that's the most we're going to be seeing. And I know, you know what? A lot of people don't like what I'm saying. You know, they like to champion the little guy. Go Boise State, go UCF, whatever. But I'm saying that over the course of a playoff, I don't see a team like that getting past the second round. And you know, and you know what? Hey, UCF, if you get in, prove me wrong. And you know what? UCF is no longer Group of Five. I screwed that up. Colorado State, let's say, or Air Force, something like that.
No, I understand what you're saying, though, because for the longest time, UCF was the standard bearer of the Group of Five. They took that position over from Boise State, if we're being honest.
We are being honest. And, you know, good for them. They, you know, there's always that expression, well, you can only beat who's on your schedule. Okay, but UCF had complete, total veto power over who was in their out-of-conference schedule, and they decide to schedule schools like FIU or whoever, as opposed to, hey, you know, back 30 years ago, UMass was a big deal around here with John Calipari, right? I mean, talk about the ultimate small conference school that managed to make it to the big time for a very short period of time. And John Calipari had an expression, anywhere, anytime, anyone. He didn't make excuses. He'll be like, hey, I'll come to your barn, Michigan State, and I'll play you. I'll come to your barn, North Carolina, and I'll play you. And UCF didn't have that.
See, and I think this opens up the door to a bigger issue within college football, within the scheduling, and that's how far in advance we're scheduling these games. If you go on fbschedules.com and look at some of these teams, they have games and dates scheduled already for as far as 2036, 2037. Mm-hmm. So if you schedule a team now, they might be world beaters right now. But fast forward 10 years, what happens if they can't get out of their own way? You scheduled a good team. Now you're playing someone that might go 4-8, 3-9.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, Nebraska back in the 80s, Tom Osborne would always make excuses like, you know, oh, well, we made these schedules so many years in advance. Like, okay, Tom, you thought Pacific was going to be a world beater in 1988. but here's the thing, and I go back to this. Why are you scheduling a game 10 years in advance? Why? If one, I need to rephrase this, during the pandemic of 2020, they were scheduling games on the fly, like mid-season, we're scheduling this game in a few weeks. Now, I'm not saying do that, but why schedule a game, you know, 10 years in advance? Like you said, Sonny, you don't know where you are as a program. 5 years ago, I didn't want Tennessee playing Oklahoma or Oregon because they weren't ready for that. They needed, frankly, softer opponents to, you know, bolster up their schedule and their win total so they can get to a bowl. Now, give me Ohio State, give me Washington, you know, because Tennessee's back on their feet now. So, you know, that's something I always loved about Tennessee. They always played one really good non-conference opponent per year. But, you know, there were times, like I said, when they weren't ready for it. It wasn't in the best interest of their program. So if you can do it for NCAA football 2024, I think you can do it in real life.
Absolutely. And let's not forget, too, one of the best games of that pandemic year was BYU and Coastal Carolina. And that was scheduled, what, 5 days in advance?
I believe it was. That's right. It was like, you know, oh, my God, this Saturday they're putting together this game. So, once again, I'm not saying go to that extreme, but why not just say, you know, okay, you know, January 15th, everyone put together your out-of-conference schedule.
No, and furthermore, I understand fans get excited about schedules and everything. I do as well. I love it. But who's going to get excited when they see, oh, right, great, Alabama's going to play Florida State in 2043. Can't wait for that. Got to mark that one down on my calendar.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There was one game that I was really excited about that was scheduled like 15 years in advance. Tennessee, believe it or not, agreed to a home-and-home with UConn. And I'm like, well, you know, we'll talk about this in a minute, but I'm like, dang, I am driving to Storrs, Connecticut and seeing my Tennessee Volunteers live. And of course, the game never took place because it was scheduled too far in advance.
How long ago was that? I have absolutely zero memory of that.
I believe the game was scheduled in either 2008 or 2009. And I believe it was for like, you know, literally 12, 13 years down the road.
Good Lord. Just in case you were wondering, the farthest schedule Tennessee has is on September 7th. They travel to Washington in 2030.
You know, it's funny. There's a small list of teams that I really want Tennessee. I want to see Tennessee play them before I depart this earth. And one of them is Washington. So I'm pretty excited about that. The other one is Texas, who they're going to play now that they're in conference. So I'm excited about that. I want to see Tennessee play USC. So they're like the last ones. Everyone else I've seen.
Yeah, and that'll be a big-time SEC Big Ten matchup, as weird as that sounds.
As weird as that sounds, you know, I really hate what happened to the Big 12. I really do. It really felt for years like the Pac-12 was, it felt like they were safe from imploding because of the geography. But, you know, the Pac-12 network was such a disaster, and it was all because they wouldn't play ball with ESPN. And at some point, you have to tap out and say, hey, this isn't working. No one has access to this. It's not making any money. But dang, I never saw the day coming when, again, because of geography, that the two Los Angeles teams, USC and UCLA, were going to leave for a predominantly Midwest, kind of sort of in the East 2 conference. And yeah, now they're literally coast to coast.
Yeah, and I am of the firm belief that you could trace the death of the Pac-12 on July 1st of this year, going all the way back to the beginning of the Pac-12 network. Had that deal been with Fox or ESPN instead of just standalone trying to do that themselves, I don't think the Pac-12 would have been in this situation, because that all came down to money and TV rights.
And let's be honest, you know, college sports are driven through television rights and television revenue. I mean, you know, we can play this amateurism game until we're blue in the face, but we both know that's not what makes the train run.
Definitely. But I do think that this move kind of helps, and Stanford and Cal going to the ACC as well. I believe it was Christian McCaffrey a few years ago that was a Heisman candidate, that one of the voters actually told him straight up, I'm sorry I didn't vote for you, but you play on the West Coast, so I never got to see any of your games. Number one, how are you a Heisman voter if you're not watching Christian McCaffrey play?
Yep.
Number two, how are you just choosing to ignore an entire coast of football, which, yes, at times it certainly did feel like it was its own little world, but that was in the best way possible.
If you're a Heisman voter, you must love college football. One of my favorite games of all time kicked off at 11:30 at night. It was either 11 or 11:30. And Sonny helped me out here. I think it was either 95 or 96. It had to be 96 or 97, excuse me, where Nebraska was coming off just steamrolling. I believe they had three national championships in a row, or two out of three. And they played Arizona State at Arizona State in the middle of the night out here. And Arizona State and Jay Plummer just rolled them. And I was all by myself in the middle of the night with no one to celebrate with. But it was such a good time.
You said that was Nebraska and Arizona State?
At Arizona State.
I am trying to find that right now.
Okay.
But yeah, like those are the kind of games that we look forward to when the East Coast travels to the West Coast. For some reason, I like that better than West comes to East. It's obviously easier for me on the East Coast to watch a Cal if they travel to, you know, Clemson or Minnesota or whatever. But there's just something great about Minnesota traveling out to the desert. Or, you know, Florida State. I know they never do this, but if Florida State went up to Oregon, that would just be awesome. The environment there.
It really would be. And here's the thing. You know, at 3:30, there is a glut of college football games. You know, you can only really watch one game, and you have to leave a lot of games out. 7:30, same thing. 11:30, like, you know, you can be a lot more choosy. And, you know, that one game will stand out. I mean, Sonny, what you just told me drove me nuts. I mean, I'm up watching the game. I'm up late watching the game. And this guy's in bed. He's got the vote, and I don't.
Yeah, really. Like, it's all right. It's 9:30. It's my bedtime. I'll catch it next week.
I think it was – his name was Bryce Love, I think, who was the Heisman candidate. I don't think it was McCaffrey. I could be wrong here.
But Bryce Love was getting –
he was getting a lot of, oh, no one sees him because he's on the West Coast. But I could be wrong about that.
If only somebody had invented a DVR, then you could have watched him and gotten your sleep.
Yeah, or heaven forbid, a VHS tape.
Oh, that's going old school. I never even thought of that. But yeah, you're right.
I'm saying, you know, you don't even need a DVR. I mean, you've got a million ways to go.
I agree with you on that. That Nebraska game that you were talking about, by the way, September 21st, 1996.
96, okay. All right, that makes sense because Jake Plummer was still playing.
Yep, Arizona State 19, Nebraska 0.
And they could have played – it was a 60-minute game. They could have played a 180-minute game. I don't think Nebraska would have scored.
Oof, that bad?
It was – I mean, they just could not get anything going. And I don't remember what the line was, but Nebraska was a big, big favorite. And it was just crazy watching them lose and, you know, just not expecting it. And I was not a big Nebraska guy, so I was absolutely thrilled with that game. But that's the thing. Now, a game like that, with the playoff being what it was, well, Nebraska's not even close to being eliminated.
Yeah, for sure. And here's another thing that drives me nuts with realignment, and this is very trivial and probably doesn't even matter, but oftentimes I'll just flip around and I'll see just a random game on Pac-12 Network from, you know, 20 years ago, whatever. Colorado versus Nebraska from 1996 is not a Pac-12 classic. Stop calling it that.
I agree they shouldn't call it that. If I'm Nebraska... if I'm Colorado, I'm like, look, you know, let them know that, hey, we were in the Big 12, or, you know, celebrate our past in the Big 12 and the Big 8, but, you know, don't pretend it's a Pac-12 classic. Come on.
Well, if you're the Pac-12, doesn't that just scream, hey, we don't have enough good games of our own? Which obviously is not true, but isn't that kind of the message that it's sending?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, you need to let everyone know as you're advertising the game, you know, hey, look, this is – don't even call it Pac-12. Just say, you know, Colorado Classic.
Yep, absolutely.
Damn shame what happened to Colorado football. Again, you know, if you were a Colorado fan, you were so spoiled in the late 80s through the 90s. And to watch that program collapse the way it did, holy crap.
If you're a Colorado fan, you were spoiled in week 4. And then just the wheels came off.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going back. I'm going back to, like, you know, 15 years ago, when we're like, you know, what is going on with Colorado? But Colorado was definitely an interesting team last year. I mean, you know, Deion Sanders had everyone's imagination captured until game 4.
Yeah, he should have a better year this year, even if the record doesn't show it. He definitely needs time. I don't care about the transfer portal. You're not going to turn around an entire program in 1 year.
I want to stick up for Deion Sanders because a lot of people, you know, it seems like they're not big college football fans. They just watch SportsCenter and, you know, oh, Deion stinks. Colorado was beyond awful in 2022. They were almost dead last in scoring amongst the, I believe it's 115 teams. They were almost dead last in points scored against. Every offensive and defensive metric, they were just terrible. And for them to finish 4-8, I mean, coming out of 2022, you're like, okay, 4-8 is a big step forward.
Colorado's biggest point total in 2022 was 34 points in a loss to Arizona State.
And what was their second biggest?
Second biggest was 20, which they did twice.
Okay.
That's pitiful. Okay,
so that is absolutely pitiful. And, you know, I mean, 11 games where you cannot score more than 20 points. And so, like I said, you know, Deion had a hole to climb out of, and it wasn't going to happen overnight.
And, you know, college football is a what have you done for me lately sport. So here's what Deion Sanders was walking into on top of his 1-11 record that he inherited. The November of 2022 Colorado schedule. They play number 8 Oregon. They lose 49-10. They play number 8 USC. They lose 55-17. They play number 17 Washington. Lose 54-7. And then play number 14 Utah and lose 63-21. Not only was it just not a great team, but how do you have any confidence left whatsoever in yourself or your surroundings? Deion did wonders with that program to have him start 3 or 4-0.
He definitely did. And like I said, you know, coming out of 2022, you're like, okay, you know, 4-8 is a step forward. And, you know, yes, it's beyond his control, but, you know, the hype during September 2023 got a little bit out of hand, and, you know, people were talking about Colorado winning a national championship. My God, come on. You know,
yeah, that's 3 or 4 years too early. At minimum.
I'm way too early, and I actually wonder what happened to Colorado. Like, during their glory days of the late 80s and the 90s, you know, they got a lot of recruits from the state of Texas. They were big in the city of Houston. They were big in the city of Dallas. And I wonder if the move to the Pac-12, you know, took that away from them. You know, I know Southern California was another big stop for Colorado. But, you know, I wonder if the move from the Big 12 and losing those Texas cities, you know, I wonder how much of a blow that was to the program.
It definitely was, but you mentioned California, and you would think that moving into the Pac-12 would give you at least a little edge there, because now maybe some California guys that don't get the opportunity at USC or UCLA or whatever, maybe instead they go to Colorado and play there, because they're still getting to play in California, they're still getting to play close to home. You would think now going back to the Big 12, now there's an opportunity that they could have both.
That is a good point, because you're right. You know, they still have their recruiting base there, but, you know, now you're recruiting in Texas. And let's face it, you know, if you're a high school senior and Deion Sanders shows up at your high school and he wants you to come to Boulder, I mean, that, you know, you have to think about that. Now, he's Deion Sanders.
That's true, but we also know exactly how tight of a ship he runs. And suspending players if they're late to meetings and you have to meet certain criteria. How many kids are going to want to go into that rather than, you know, oh, I can go here and play football and start and party and do all those things, where at Colorado, I really can't.
I think you can party in Colorado. I think what you can't do is show up late at meetings. And, you know, Deion was talking earlier in the year, like when he was a red hot name, and they were asking him, you know, is your next stop the NFL? And Deion's like, no, I am never going to the NFL. I coach too hard for NFL players. And, you know, to me, if you're a high school kid, do you want to be coached hard? I mean, there's not a universal answer. It depends on the kid, but I would think yes. I would think you want to be coached hard in order for the guy to bring out the best in you. Like, you know, coached hard, you know, not grind you into the ground like Bear Bryant would do, but the way a guy like Deion would.
If kids didn't want to be coached hard, then nobody would go to Alabama. Jahmyr Gibbs said it himself after his first practice with the Lions, that it was easier practicing with the Lions than it was under Nick Saban.
I am not in the least bit surprised. I don't think, with the possible exception of the New England Patriots, I mean, both Parcells and Saban are now retired, I can't imagine there being an NFL team that would coach you as hard as Nick Saban did.
And I think that's part of the reason why Saban wasn't as big a success in the NFL, and why I don't think Deion Sanders would be as well.
No, you're right. To this day, I think Nick Saban in the NFL would have worked had they given it more time. But the reality is that, I mean, Alabama had been on its rear end for a long time, okay? They had not found the right coach for a long time. Yeah. And they finally just said, you know, they went after Rich Rodriguez, and Rich Rodriguez said, no, I'd rather stay at West Virginia than coach at Alabama. okay, this is like 20 years ago. Can you imagine? And finally, Jimmy Sexton, you know, Nick Saban's agent, reaches out to the Dolphins or reaches out to Alabama and says, look, you know, Nick's interested, but you need to pay him. And Alabama went out, they got the money, and they shattered the salary scale for college coaches. The top guys were making, you know, $2 million a year, $2.5 million a year, and Saban comes in at $4 million a year, 8 years, every penny guaranteed. And I remember everyone was just blown away, like, you know, wow, what's Steve Spurrier going to get paid? What's Bob Stoops going to get paid? And but you know, I give Alabama credit. They got the job done. They picked their guy, and they said, "All right, we're not letting you say no."
Yeah, and that's the thing with that contract. That was never going to be a good contract. That was either going to be worth every penny or the worst money that university has ever spent.
It was, and you know, like I said, they stepped up. They knew what they were getting because Nick Saban was beating Alabama every year when he was at LSU. And but like I said, not everyone agrees with me. But I think had Saban, you know, stuck with Miami, had Alabama not thrown a Brinks truck at him, I in my opinion, it would have worked out in the long run. But we talk about Saban coaching guys hard. What was the guy's – I don't remember his name, but he was from USC, and during a practice – he was a defensive lineman for USC, and during a practice, Saban made the guy cry.
I feel like I remember what you're talking about, but I
– I think his name was Manny something.
Was it Manny Wright?
It may have been. The story came out that Saban just broke this guy down, and if you're – good enough to even make a camp in the NFL and the coach breaks you in half like that, you're being coached hard.
Absolutely.
Harder than you were at USC, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And that's when USC was winning championships too.
Mm-hmm. That was under Pete Carroll, who went on to do great things in the NFL.
That's true. And I want to clarify too, that just because I don't think Saban would have been a great NFL coach, that's not a slight on him. That's college is for some people and it's not for others. I think we could both agree, Bill Belichick, I don't think, would last more than 2 years in college.
He lasted 1 year at Air Force.
that is just square peg, round hole right there.
Exactly. You know, Bill Parcells, I know we're not talking about college football, but the man will always, you know, have a giant place in my heart because I truly believe that the New England Patriots would no longer be the New England Patriots had it not been for Bill Parcells. So talk about another guy who coached hard.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're about an hour in. We're going to wrap this up in a minute, but I do have one last question that I wanted to save for last for you. Now, at the beginning of the show, I said that you're one of the smartest college football people I know, and I stand by that. And the reason the reason for that is I've seen you make some pretty outrageous statements. And hold on. The first thought that comes to my head is, you know, that's just ridiculous. But then you explain to me why you're thinking what you're thinking. And not only do I realize, wait a minute, this isn't ridiculous, you might also be right. So, with that said, what is your biggest college football hot take?
Okay, this is my biggest prediction, hot take, whatever you want to call it. I believe that, I want to say before the end of this decade, but I think it's coming, that both the SEC and the Big Ten are going to secede from whatever is left of the NCAA and become their own competing leagues in college football. And I think it's going to be self-contained, like no out-of-conference games, just like, you know, the NBA doesn't play games against teams from Europe or they don't play college teams. It's strictly going to be SEC versus SEC. Like, you know, you don't see the New York Yankees playing the Worcester Woo Sox or whatever they are. I also think that, you know, I don't think this is a hot take. I think the ACC is in a lot of trouble. And I think, you know, it's just a matter of time before either that grant of rights things that is, you know, the only thing keeping the ACC together expires, and you know, pretty soon the SEC is going to have North Carolina and Virginia Tech and maybe a couple of other teams.
Wow, that is certainly a hot take, and to be honest, one that I hope you're wrong about.
I hope I'm wrong about it too. I do hope I'm wrong about it, but I see it happening. And, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, I'd be like, McAdam, what, are you crazy? Well, I now live in a world where UCLA and Rutgers are in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's certainly a strange conference rivalry. So if you think that if you think that this is going to happen, how do we get there? Is it the teams that we have now in those conferences, or do they pick apart other respective conferences? Does the group of five, do some of them get called up? How do you see this working?
I think that, you know, there's obviously this is about revenue. And if you're going to get a piece of that pie, you have to donate to that pie. So I don't think that the SEC is going to give, for example, a South Florida an invite. Like, what's the point? They don't bring enough to the table. Nothing against South Florida, just the way it goes. In order, you know, you're going to have to be a big time player in order to get into the SEC. And really, and so far the SEC, everyone involved is like, look, we're happy with our geography. We're not looking to move into California or the Northeast or anything like that. We want it to be a Southern product. And I think, you know, really the only logical additions are going to be, you know, once again, either North Carolina or North Carolina State or Virginia Tech. And they don't need both.
But not Clemson or Florida State? Or do you see them more as a fit
in my opinion, no. And shout out to my friend Thomas Bain, who thinks I'm dead wrong about this. But South Carolina, you're already in South Carolina. You've got the Gamecocks. Florida State, you're already in Florida. You've already got the Gators. You don't need the Noles. Now, you might say, okay, well, if you take Florida State, that keeps the Big Ten out of Florida. And you might want to look at that. But what do? You take Florida and Miami? I just don't think they bring enough to the table. You know, let the Big Ten have Florida State.
So not to insult other programs, but what about teams that are currently there that don't bring a lot to the table? And not to single anybody out, but I am looking at you, Vanderbilt. Yep.
I mean, you know, let's look at it this way. If you were to start an SEC, let's say you're playing NCAA football 2024 and you're putting together a conference, you're asking yourself, okay, does the SEC, do we really need Auburn? No offense to Auburn fans, but we're already in Alabama. Do we really need Mississippi State? But I think, and Vanderbilt speaks for itself, but I think that in this is one case where tradition will win out and they will keep those. I don't think they're going to keep anybody. I don't think they're going to kick anyone out.
You just kicked Auburn out of the SEC. That might be a hotter take than the one you originally had.
No, I'm saying you can't kick Auburn out of the SEC, but I'm saying, you know, if you were starting from scratch, like, would you include Auburn? And my honest answer is no. You're already in Alabama and you're already in Georgia.
Man, I just don't know if I can agree with that. I think I wouldn't even entertain the thought of booting Auburn.
Well, again, and I'm saying that they won't, and I'm saying that I wouldn't. If I were running the SEC, there's no way I'd kick Auburn or Mississippi State or even Vanderbilt out, okay? I'm saying, you know, a totally alternative universe if you're building from scratch. But let's face it. There's a reason why the SEC took Texas and not Texas Tech and Texas. There's a reason why they took Oklahoma but not Oklahoma State. There's a reason why the Big Ten wanted Washington and Oregon but not Washington State and Oregon State.
And I totally agree with that 100%. But if you're looking at this from the perspective of if you're the commissioner of the SEC, I get it why you wouldn't want a team like Texas Tech or Oregon State. No insult to them. They're both solid programs. Oregon State might be in for a rough one this year, whatever. But if you're looking at it from the money-making perspective, why would you not want to bring in a team like Florida State? Because now you have that rivalry within the conference.
True, and I'm talking about what I'm talking about would eliminate the Florida-Florida State rivalry. But at the same time, we've seen rivalries eliminated before. I mean, the biggest game of the year for a decade was Oklahoma and Nebraska. They don't, you know, they played recently, but they don't play regularly anymore. And it's just a sad reality in college football that when the landscapes change, sometimes rivalries go away with it. And, you know, we've seen it. I mean, Pitt, West Virginia hadn't played in 10 years. You know, there are other examples.
Kansas-Nebraska is another good one.
Kansas-Missouri.
I'm sorry, yeah, Kansas-Missouri.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that's just another one. And, you know, the list goes on. I mean, it's not basketball. You can only play, you know, you're only playing three or four out-of-conference games a year. And let's face it, no one really stacks up. You know, you've got to have those, you know, at least a couple of games that, yeah, we're going to win that one.
Yeah, you're right on that. But I don't know, man. Losing rivalries like that in college football, I think, is part of the reason why the sport is, I don't want to say in a decline because it's not, but
it's just
the overall morale of the sport, I think, is. And well, I think losing rivalries is a big part of it.
I look at it this way. It seems to me like the average, I'll just throw this out there, Texas Longhorns fan is not terribly upset about losing the rivalry to Texas Tech or to TCU, or, you know, I think Oklahoma State is a little bit of a rivalry. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, I think Oklahoma fans are happy that they're in the SEC, even if it means leaving Bedlam behind.
Texas fans don't have time to be worried about losing the Texas Tech rivalry because now they have to play Texas A&M, who they've been dodging for the last 11 years.
Yeah, that's a very interesting, I don't know, dynamic between those two schools. I mean, just they do not like each other. And, you know, Texas got all, you know, well, we're still Texas. And, you know, Texas A&M is like, hey, we're the only Texas team in the SEC. And that was just an interesting dynamic for about 12 years.
And still is, and might just brew right back up. If you strip everything down, that might be the most personal rivalry in all of college because it goes well beyond sports.
It does. In my opinion, that would go to Alabama-Auburn only because you hear stories every year about, you know, an Alabama alum marries an Auburn alum, and the loser of that season's game, they have to have their diploma hanging upside down over the toilet for the next 365 days. So I've never heard of that with the Aggies and the Longhorns, so I'm giving it to the Bama-Auburn rivalry.
And I'm sure in that scenario, you're wishing that they bring back ties for one game only.
You know what? Here's another hot take. I'm not in favor of ties, especially back in the day where you'd have like Auburn. I think one year they went like 8-2-3 or something crazy, 7-2-3 or something crazy like that. But yeah. I do think that there should be a limit of 4 overtimes in college football. You know, it's college football. You don't want these guys out there playing indefinitely, having 7 overtimes like you did one year with Ole Miss and Arkansas, I think it was. I mean, you know, put a limit on that. And if you have 4 overtimes and there has not been a winner declared, it'll happen two or three times a year tops. Just declare that game a tie and move on.
See, that's another one I'm going to have to disagree with. That Texas Tech LSU game from a few years ago, what was that, 74-72?
Yeah.
Man, inject that into my veins and then give me a Hawaii game right after that.
You know, here's the thing. From a fan standpoint, we love it. I mean, what incredible excitement. But to have a student athlete, as they like to say, but I'll call them, you know, a kid who's 19, 20, 21 years old, out there playing football for 70, 80 minutes. I don't think even more than that, 90, 100 minutes, it's not a good idea.
That's very true. But if they're going to
not really change much. I wish that they would get rid of the 2-point conversion tries.
Now, do you mean in general or the one where you have to go for two after the first two overtimes?
Where it's just alternating 2-point conversions. I think it's after the third overtime.
Okay. I think it's over the second. I could be wrong. But, I mean, that helps theoretically move the game along because, you know, there's a greater chance of one team making it, one team not making it, than the field goal or the extra point, which is academic.
Yeah, but then you got games like I think it was Penn State and Illinois or Indiana that went to 7 overtimes and the winner scored like 20 points. And it was like watching paint dry because neither team could move the ball 3 yards.
I don't remember that game. I you know what? And it was probably a 3:30 game from a few years ago when so much is going on a college football Saturday that I just forgot about it. But that's the thing. College football Saturdays, there are only 11 or 12 real college football game Saturdays per year. And they're cherished. And it's March, and I already miss them, and I can't wait to get back to them.
Somehow, I underplayed how bad that Illinois game was. It was Penn State and Illinois. Illinois won 22-18 in 9 overtimes.
Oh, my God. I don't know how I forgot that. 9 overtimes.
It was the only game I've ever watched that could make that 3-2 Auburn-Mississippi State game look like a Texas Tech Oklahoma shootout.
I'll tell you something. I showed that Oklahoma Texas Tech box score to my brother, who was just like, you know, he's an NFL guy, and he's just looking at it, and he's like, he sees this stat, he's like, this can't be real. Neither can this one. Neither can that one. That was the game when Patrick Mahomes was still at Texas Tech, and neither team was playing any defense. It was nuts.
Yeah, Mahomes versus Mayfield. That's an underrated classic right there.
It really is.
If you're a fan of that style of football. If you're a defensive guy, an Iowa fan, you think that's absolutely miserable, but give me one of those games over, you know, 20-18 and 9 overtimes.
Oh, for sure. I think Iowa fans have had enough misery inflicted upon them over the past 3 or 4 years where they have a dominant defense and the coach is just like, yeah, we're not going to do any offense. We're just going to run and rely on our defense. And, you know, oh, what a surprise. They haven't won even a Big Ten championship.
Yeah, speaking of not being able to move the ball 3 yards, shout out Iowa fans.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Patrick Mahomes, or I mentioned him. I remember the first time he got mentioned during a Texas Tech game. I'm like, Patrick Mahomes, that name sounds familiar. And I immediately wikied him. I'm like, oh, wow, that's Pat Mahomes' kid. So that was my introduction to the best football player in the world right now.
Yeah, I didn't even know his father played baseball until then. And then I went back and realized that I had a baseball card of him.
Yeah, he played for the Red Sox. He was around for a long time.
Oh, yeah, so he's one of your guys then.
Yeah, he was. He didn't do that well out here, but, I mean, he definitely had a decent career. And like I said, just, you know, that one, like, you know, you kind of hear something and you prick your ears up. And, like, Patrick Mahomes, this sounds familiar. On to the wiki.
Hey, even if you don't do well in your MLB career, you can still say you had one, and that's pretty damn impressive.
I mean, I look at it this way. I graduated from a huge high school, and not one person I went to school with, and we're talking, you know, 5 years, the guys who were seniors when I was a sophomore and the guys who were sophomores when I was a senior, no one made it in professional sports. We had one guy who got drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals and didn't make the team, and that's it. One of the girls made the pro bowling tour. But, you know, that in the great big high school I went to, like 800 something kids graduating a year, nothing came of it. So that it just speaks volumes about how good you have to be to even make a team.
The elite of the elite.
Yes.
All right. And speaking of the elite, John, you host your own pro wrestling podcast, Stick to Wrestling. I mentioned at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about that and where we can find you on social media.
Well, first of all, if you search John McAdam on Twitter or whatever they're calling it nowadays, if you search the word John McAdam and follow the guy who has the Stick to Wrestling logo as his avatar. I don't always stick to wrestling on Twitter. A lot of baseball and football talk, a lot of baseball talk, especially this time of year. And yeah, I hope, you know, and you know what? If two or three people who listen to this college football podcast, you're like, yeah, I like classic pro wrestling too. Just search, you know, Stick to Wrestling podcast and give it a try.
Guys, I'm telling you, if you are a fan of pro wrestling, especially old school pro wrestling, this is a podcast you absolutely need to check out. Week in, week out, John produces great content, has great guests, always insightful conversations. I cannot recommend his podcast enough.
Sonny, thank you. And I'll also take one quick step further. The World Wrestling Federation went from a Northeastern company into a national company 40 years ago, starting towards the end of 1983, but they got more aggressive into 1984. And we take a deep dive into that. It's me and Steve Generelli, and we both grew up in the Northeast. We grew up on the WWF. We saw the changes that were going on in real time. We, you know, we're not reading a history book and learning about this. We're telling you what we saw with our own eyes. So if you're into that kind of thing, give us a shot.
Yeah, and his retrospectives were pretty good so far. I think the last episode, I'm a little bit behind. I think the last one I had was you were looking at the year-end awards for 1984. So I think that was a couple episodes ago. But like I said, great show, must listen.
Thank you. That was actually only one show ago, so you're not that far behind. And yeah, we have a variety of topics, but it's usually wrestling from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And the Stick to Wrestling, you know, the name of the podcast is kind of a me sticking my tongue out at people. Like if I say something about someone non-wrestling related that they take offense to, it's like, meh, Stick to Wrestling. So like I kind of threw that in there, like, okay, Stick to Wrestling, like this is me throwing it back in your face.
Everybody's always got something to complain about, you know how it is.
Including and especially me.
I am in that as well. Anything else you'd like to plug?
No, I'm actually good, but I mean, thank you for having me on. We, you know, we're talking about doing maybe a half an hour and 45 or 45 minutes. We went way beyond that because we were both having a real good time.
Absolutely. And it was one of those conversations that doesn't feel like it's going that long. And I cannot thank you enough for finally having you on. And I can honestly say, I'm looking forward to the next time you're hopping on.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to the next time you have me, during the season, after the season, before the season, whatever you got.
Absolutely. It'll be happening soon.
All right, Sonny. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.